On this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll take a look at the Capitol and hear about some first mixed signals from incoming House Speaker Dennis Bonnet. We'll also hear about some developments in the Texas House Freedom Caucus and get an update from Washington about the fight for funding for President Trump's border wall. In our interview, we talked to Jeremy Newman with Texas Homeschool Coalition about some fights they expect over parental rights in the upcoming session. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan about a giant killer worm. Coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. Find me on Twitter, @TweetTonyMac. With this week's top story, I've got Brandon Waltons, Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard, getting some mixed signals, kind of for the first time, out of incoming House Speaker Dennis Bonnet.
Yes, State Representative Dennis Bonnet, the presumptive next Speaker of the House, giving some mixed signals to Republicans in his announcement of two parliamentarians, both with Democrat ties.
Yeah, so interesting thing there. You've seen a lot of good things out of Bonnet since he's kind of sewed up the race for Speaker, doing some things to actually cut some of the existing establishment ties to Democrats.
Exactly. I mean, he went to the Republican caucus, was campaigning to Republicans first in his bid for the Speaker before gaining Democrat support. And most importantly, telling Republicans, telling lawmakers that Gordon Johnson is not going to be part of the process.
This is the Democrat consultant lobbyist who was kind of the puppet master of the House the last 10 years, saying he's out of the picture. Also, strong statement from with him and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
Yes, they had a meeting and a strong statement from both of them saying they want to work together. This was giving Republicans a lot to look forward to for the next session.
A lot of suggestion of, hey, here's a guy coming in who wants to reform things, wants to allow conservative reforms to advance. Now we have this appointment of two parliamentarians, kind of, it's not the end of the world, but it's kind of mixed signals, potentially.
No, it's interesting. And so they actually picked two parliamentarians. Now, the first is a man by the name of Hugh Brady, a guy who really knows the rules. He literally
basically the expert.
Yeah,
he's the expert on House rules.
Yes, but also an Obama administration, worked inside the Obama administration, is also a parliamentarian for the Travis County Democrat Party, has done that. And then likewise, you have Sharon Carter, the other appointee, who has served as an assistant parliamentarian under Speaker Pete Laney. Now, this was the last Democrat Speaker of the House.
Yeah, and so a lot of people looking at these appointments and saying, look, is this going to signal reform? Because what you had over the last 10 years, really, under outgoing Speaker Joe Strauss, is abuse of the process to suppress conservatives, abusing the rules, and relying on their parliamentarians to do so. Maybe mixed signals here.
Maybe mixed signals. It's important to remember, though, that no matter who the parliamentarian is, the ultimate person who makes these decisions and who sees the rules being enforced and calls the balls and strikes is the Speaker himself. And so ultimately, Bonham will have the responsibility himself.
Yeah, and so, we don't know. We know that Brady is a respected expert on the rules,
right.
So we'll see whether he is a respected parliamentarian. And on the same coin, regardless of what he advises, the Speaker is ultimately responsible.
That's right. We'll be watching.
Speaking of developments down at the Texas Capitol, for our next story, let's turn to Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Saw a big high-profile departure from the Texas House Freedom Caucus. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's right, Tony. Collin County State Representative Jeff Leach announced last week that he would no longer be a member of the Freedom Caucus moving forward. That, coupled with the departure of Matt Rinaldi of Irving after his loss in the November election to a Democrat, means that the Freedom Caucus will have two members fewer than it had last session. Of course, we aren't exactly sure which returning members or freshman incoming members will join.
Yeah, and so for listeners out there who aren't really familiar with the Texas House Freedom Caucus, let's talk a little bit about what that entity is, why it matters.
Well, that's right, Tony. Modeled very much after the Federal Freedom Caucus, which of course has Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and those guys, the Texas House Freedom Caucus formed last session and was comprised of roughly the 12 most conservative members of the Texas House who were really organized to oppose leadership and fight for conservative reforms. You know, often in the Texas House, it's not possible for conservatives to get a floor vote on these conservative legislation bills that were killed by Joe Strauss in the committee process. So you had groups like the Freedom Caucus and conservative lawmakers therein fighting to amend these bills, fighting to get hearings on other bills and other things during the session.
Yeah, you know, going in and actually forcing and pushing the agenda of the conservative grassroots in the process and have quite a bit of success with that, you know, actually seriously influencing and affecting the process throughout the last legislative session. So State Rep. Jeff Leach leaving the caucus saying, hey, I want to go just work through the Republican caucus. Now, it raises this interesting question of what is this organization's mission? Because if it's defined in the negative, we're here to oppose Joe Strauss, well, there's no Joe Strauss anymore. So I think that, you know, okay, of course you wouldn't really participate in an oppose Joe Strauss organization. What is the organization's mission moving forward as we head into this next session?
Well, I think that's an open question, Tony. You know, the quote is always, you can survive without a God, but you're dead without a devil. And right now, the Freedom Caucus is kind of experiencing a little bit of that. If you looked at the last Republican Party of Texas convention, they said they were organized around amplifying the voice of the grassroots. Well, you know, the problem with that is that it's a kind of globby goal that's not very well defined. What does that mean you're actually going to do? For better or worse, they were defined as opposing Joe Strauss, fighting for those conservative reforms, and actually winning a lot of battles on those issues. But now he's no longer going to be the leader of the Texas.
There's no more devil, right?
No more devil. So you either have to find one or you need to find a God.
Yeah.
and right now, they haven't exactly staked that out.
Yeah.
It's very clear that Jeff Leach kind of views it as, okay, well, they're going to be combative to the new speaker, and that's not necessarily something I'm on board with. And so he's looking to have a change of pace. But the rest of the Freedom Caucus, the other members, who all of them supported Dennis Bonin, haven't really defined their new goals yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to look back to what they did at the Republican convention last summer, where they said, look, we're for these legislative priorities. And, you know, organizing around a distinct legislative agenda seems to be the path forward.
Well, I think that's right, Tony. You know, Newt Gingrich famously had his contract with America back in 1994. The House Freedom Caucus absolutely needs that. And the legislative priorities of the RPT are a great place to start, of course. You know, those priorities are constitutional carry, protecting religious liberty, fighting for pro-life reforms. These are the bread and butter of a conservative agenda, and this is something that the Freedom Caucus could rally behind.
I appreciate your reporting on it, Kerry. We'll have to keep an eye on it moving forward.
Well, that's right, Tony. And of course, that eye can always be trained at TexasScorecard.com with the latest on all these issues.
Next, let's turn our focus to Washington, D.C. and talk to Capitol correspondent Destin Sinsky. A big fight brewing over funding for President Trump's border wall.
That's right, Tony. So towards the end of the year here, the last big fight that we will see in Washington will be over some government funding, whether or not we're going to have a government shutdown. And the centerpiece of that argument is funding for Trump's wall.
Yeah. And so there's been this resolution to fund 75% of the government. There's still this 25% remainder. So you see a shutdown towards the end of the year if something isn't passed. That's a critical moment for those who say, hey, let's make sure that funding bill includes funding for the wall.
That's right. So as you and our listeners know, January 3rd, Democrats will take over the House. This is the little window that we have to get some progress on this.
So Senator Cruz. Nancy Pelosi is going to be the speaker.
That's right.
All, you know, indications that she'll win and be the speaker in January. And she's saying, no way, no how, we're not going to fund a wall.
That's right. She's even gone as far as saying that funding for the border wall would be immoral, ineffective, and expensive. But Republicans on the other side making their pitch as well. Senator Cruz and three other senators filing a bill last week called the Wall Act, which would actually fund it in its entirety. So you've got $0 and then the full $25 billion that the wall would cost on either end of the argument here.
Yeah, under Senator Cruz's bill, how do they go about actually funding that?
Right. So Senator Cruz's bill basically cleans up some welfare things, benefits that
make sure illegal aliens are. Yeah, making sure illegals aren't getting welfare benefits.
Right.
That's going to save money.
Right, as well as increasing the penalties and fines associated with coming here illegally, breaking the law. So that's how it would fund the full $25 billion of Trump's wall. Now, Trump is actually asking for just $5 billion, kind of a compromise conversation starting piece as we see how this battle shapes up over the next days ahead.
Yeah, and so what we're looking at, December 21st is kind of a cutoff date for funding to avoid a government shutdown.
Right.
And you're seeing a fight over this $5 billion as part of the bill that might pass as part of that.
Right, right. So basically the one quarter of the government that hasn't been already funded for fiscal year 2019 would shut down on the 21st. And the last day would be the third when, you know, our new Congress is sworn in.
Yeah. And so you've got Republicans who many of them reelected coming out of this election, all running saying, support President Trump and opposing illegal immigration, support border security.
Sure.
This is kind of this critical window where they have an opportunity to do something before that window goes away for a couple of years.
That's right. Number one issue right up there with property taxes here in the state of Texas for 3 or 4 years now. This is something that Texans would like to see get done. We'll see how it shapes up in the weeks ahead.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to have on the program this week Jeremy Newman, Director of Public Policy with Texas Homeschool Coalition. Thanks for joining us, Jeremy.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to have you on to talk about y'all's agenda headed into the 2019 legislative session here in Texas. And it's really interesting, you know, Texas Homeschool Coalition, people would think, oh, well, this is a group that's solely focused on homeschooling, but you're really a broader group focused on family rights generally.
Right. Yeah. So you'll discover during the session where, you know, it's not just education issues. We're in there on issues that relate at all to the right of families to raise their children.
Yeah. And so I think this is a discussion that even listeners out there who maybe don't homeschool or don't care about homeschooling or what have you, they ought to, but let's say they don't. This is relevant to everybody. So let's talk a little bit about what y'all's agenda is going to be as we head into the session. What are y'all going to be working on?
Sure. Yeah. So the first priority is always killing bad legislation, which, you know, we can talk some of the details about that in a little bit. But then the three particular bills that we're pushing, the first one is a major CPS reform bill. And the second one is called the Family Unity Act. And the third one is the Tim Tebow bill.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about some of the legislation you are working on. I know you've been working on the Tebow bill for a while and these other bills. But let's talk about killing bad legislation. I think that gets missed in the mix sometimes. People think, oh, okay, well, we're going to set a legislative agenda. We're going to go pass bills. You know, defeating bad bills, sometimes way more important. What does that mean? What are you actually facing here in Texas that would be bad legislation from the perspective of a family rights organization, from the perspective of a homeschool organization?
We're out there every legislative session trying to defend against bad issues that most people don't expect to come up. And the reason is a lot of people kind of expect that the status quo is safe going into the session, and all they have to be concerned about is what good things to improve on. Well, the reality is the status quo is not always safe. And so each legislative session, we normally have one or two big issues that we have to fight off. And this last session, as an example, Representative Cindy Burkett filed a bill that would have allowed CPS to make regular monthly visits to the home of anyone that they determine to be at risk of future abuse or neglect.
Yeah, I think I remember this bill, and it was really kind of startling. Or what it reminded me of the movie Minority Report with the pre-crime people, you know, just like literally going out and looking at demographic data and these other things and saying, well, this home, we don't know any evidence that this home is an abusive household, but we think based off the data, we maybe need to go check and go ask some questions, because this could be an abusive household, just demographically, that kind of thing. And it's like, whoa, this is really ripe for abuse.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is that, you know, when that discussion was coming up in committee, there were only a handful of people who brought that up. Everybody else was, you know, all on board with, okay, yeah, let's find the problems before they happen. I'm like, okay, but what you're saying is, and the bill even specifically said this, we'll factor in how, you know, the low income status of the family and the number of young children they have. And then CPS has an untold number of other factors they get to make up to factor in. And we're just going to show up at your house and say, our system says you are likely to commit abuse and neglect, so we're going to come to your house.
And then we're going to start asking you questions. It was really kind of
disturbing to see that going on. And you see it in the legislature where anytime you're talking about abuse of children, on the one hand, you have people going, well, let's do anything. Anything we can do, if it protects and saves one child, well, then it's worth it. And, you know, that sounds good, but it's not true. You know, you can't trample over the rights of everyone else trying to find the one needle in a haystack that is a problem.
Yeah, and probably the biggest perspective issue that I think that, you know, the Child Protective Services organization and advocates have in Texas is that they view the removal of the child from the home as a neutral factor. Like, you know, if we don't know exactly what's going on, we're just going to take the kid from the home and then figure out there's a problem. Well, the reality is the one thing you can guarantee will cause trauma to the child is removing them from the home.
Right. Yeah.
The question you have to ask is whether or not whatever trauma you think may be happening in the home is greater or less than the trauma you know you are causing by removing them from the home.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. So, you know, that was something that was going on last session, could come up again, I assume. But what are you all looking on your agenda? Is there anything that you kind of know is coming or potentially coming that would be bad legislation this session that, you know, people interested in protecting family rights are going to have to get engaged on?
Yeah, so one example is there was kind of a national push, particularly in the national media this year, to increase regulation on homeschooling families. And the argument kind of sparked out of California, where there was a case that happened there where this family had claimed to be homeschooling. They were discovered later to have been abusing, neglecting their children. And the response from California was, okay, well, I guess that means that all homeschool families are prone to abuse and neglect. So we're going to pass a law that says that if you homeschool in California, you have to have a regular visit annually from the government. And like a home inspection, basically, is what we're talking about. And similar legislation was proposed in Hawaii and a couple other states. And the crazy thing is that the data shows clearly that homeschool families are, in fact, less prone to abuse and neglect than other families. But nevertheless, they were the targets of all of this legislation. And we've had a couple news organizations in Texas who have kind of trumpeted some of those same narratives. And so we are preparing for the possibility that something like that will get filed in Texas next year. Although, to be frank, you know, homeschoolers in Texas have been, you know, active for the last 30 years in elections and the legislature. So we're prepared for something like that to happen. But nonetheless, we want to make sure if it does happen, you know, we bury it too deep to dig up again.
Yeah. Just because you can win a fight doesn't mean you don't have to put in the work to win the fight. So,
exactly.
Well, so those are some things to be on the watch of, but let's talk about some good stuff that y'all are actually trying to improve on. I know you mentioned CPS report and the Family Unity Act and the Tebow bill. So let's talk about CPS reform. You know, this is something that, again, you know, tied in with this issue. We want to have a good CPS system. There are kids who are being abused, but at the same time, you can't have a process that tramples on the rights of families. So what are y'all working on in that arena?
Right. So, you know, we had great progress in the CPS reform last legislative session, but there are a lot of issues. So we have to come back this session with more of them. And, you know, the governor's office even commissioned a work group to study some of these issues over the interim. And so we feel pretty good going to the session that we'll be able to make progress on more of the issues that didn't get addressed last session. To give you one example, there's a law on the books in Texas right now that basically allows, or it's referred to as the court ordered services law. And what it allows is for CPS to request that a family be forced into CPS services to solve some problem that CPS thinks they have.
Yeah, and so that's, I mean, it. I think my understanding of it is this is kind of a less measure than taking children away or doing something extreme like that, and that sounds good, but my understanding is there's some problems with that.
Exactly, yeah, because the statute in very literal terms has zero due process protections in it. It literally just says CPS may request and the court may grant. There are no required findings that the court has to have in order to make that decision. And, you know, if the family is forced into services, then if they fail to complete those services, they can be sanctioned for it. They can even have their kids removed for it. And so what happens in a lot of these cases is If CPS gets involved with this family and they discover early on they don't have the evidence for removal, then they have this alternate process they can pursue that requires no particular findings up front, where they can force the family into services, and then if the family fails to complete those services, well, you get sanctioned for it.
Yeah, and that of course allows them to regularly be in and around the home and in the family and kind of up in their business, so looking for something that they can justify a removal action on.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have changes we're making to that statute that just require basic due process protections and certain findings up front to guarantee that you're only forcing a family into services if there's an actual problem that you know is happening, and if the services you're offering are designed to fix that particular problem instead of having to remove the child.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, let's talk about that second item on y'all's positive agenda, the Family Unity Act. What is that?
Yeah, so the gist of it is that, you know, we researched the last 100 years of precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court and the Texas Supreme Court, and we condensed it down into one bill, and it's all designed to codify the constitutional scope of parental rights. And the crazy thing about it is that, you know, this is literally the oldest fundamental liberty interest the U.S. Supreme Court has ever found, and they've said that in their own words. But, you know, local judges and local attorneys often have no idea that it exists or that it requires anything in particular of them. Sure. And so you have this status quo where a lot of times all the parties get into court and the judge will kind of listen to all the opinions everybody has on what the best interests of the child are. And then they'll say, I like a little of this, a little of that. And they kind of treat it like a buffet and they create something that sounds good. Well, the case law says really clearly that if there's a fit parent that comes before the court, you have to presume that whatever their decision was is in the best interest of the child.
Right.
So, you know, best interest isn't just some weird ambiguous standard. It's clearly defined. And, you know, local judges and attorneys don't understand that. So we're trying to put it directly into the family code because often they never look past the family code to get direction.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense. I mean, we look at parenting that goes on out there and, you know, you've got liberal parents doing this and that with their kids, and you've got conservative parents doing this and that with their kids, and you got parents of all kind of different points of views and religious perspectives, all of these things going into parenting. And what one parent decides is completely reasonable, another parent might think is completely ridiculous. So you can't exactly be second guessing that on every basis. I think every parent probably has made decisions that somebody else might disagree with. You know, at the end of the day, that's their choice and that's their prerogative as a parent. It's their right. So that makes a lot of sense. Let's turn to this last item, the Tebow bill. I think this has gotten a lot of attention in previous sessions, certainly because of the name, but it's a pretty cool reform. It would be really good for some kids.
Yeah, so the Tim Tebow bill, people who, you know, don't know anything about it ask me if it's, you know, something religious freedom-based, but it's what the Tim Tebow bill does is it allows homeschoolers to compete in extracurricular activities at the local public school. And the reason it's named after Tim Tebow is because Tim Tebow was a homeschool student from Florida who only was able to participate in football and went on to compete in the NFL, win the Heisman Trophy, because Florida allows homeschool students to compete in local public school extracurricular activities. And, you know, there are 35 other states right now that allow you know, various levels of access for homeschoolers to compete through the local public school. Texas does not. And the issue is that all these families are still paying taxes to support these activities that go on across the street at the public school, but they don't get any of that access. And if the family lives way out in a rural area, there are often zero opportunities. You know, there literally aren't enough families in the area to create a sports team or a band or something like that. Or you have to drive 3 or 4 hours to get to the closest option. And then if you live in the metropolitan areas, you know, the private options are expensive.
Yeah. So basically we have kids with talent in homeschool families in Texas right now who could be the next Tim Tebow, could be a Heisman Trophy winner, could be an NFL quarterback. And our policy unjustly says, well, you can't go and participate, even though this works in 35 other states, you can't go to your school and participate. I really think that's that's sad. I think it's a good bill, certainly for people to rally around as we head into the session. Well, so we're running out of time. I think that's all the time we have to talk about substance. But before we finish, please tell listeners, how can they get connected with Texas Homeschool Coalition if they want to get involved, if they want to participate? What do they need to do?
Sure. So our website is thsc.org. So if you go there, you can sign up for email updates, and we'll be sending people, you know, emails and doing blogs during the legislative session to keep people up to date on everything that's going on. And they can find, you know, more detailed information about each of the issues that we just talked about as well. And then they can find us on Facebook. It's just Texas Homeschool Coalition. And you know, we put out probably more, you know, minute-by-minute updates sometimes during the legislative session if people want to find information there.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to seeing how y'all do with your legislative agenda this session. And as the fights blossom and bloom, we may have to have you back on to talk about those. So I appreciate it, Jeremy.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for the call.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program sponsored by Empower Texans? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can compete with your friends and fellow activists across the state by watching a live leaderboard, as well as seeing what others are doing across the great state of Texas. You can even earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearers logo on it, or a multitude of other prizes. For example, we just gave away an awesome custom Glock handgun. With the Texas Torchbearers program, it's even easier to make a difference. Everyone should sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
Texas Scorecard's Capitol correspondent Destin Sinsky has a new article up at texasscorecard.com about how some legislators are working together to end Texas' practice of doing Hollywood handouts. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan explains what that has to do with a giant killer worm.
Texas taxpayers paid for a Mongolian death worm. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Texas taxpayers pay for a lot of things the normal person wouldn't think government should be buying. And at the top of that list would be paying for a Mongolian death worm. Confused? Yeah, you probably should be. You see, the Mongolian death worm isn't some scary monster. It was a grade B made-for-TV sci-fi movie that no one saw. But your tax dollars paid for it. As it turns out, nearly $100 million have been paid out in subsidies to major corporations to fund projects like the Mongolian death worm movie and even TV commercials. Advocates for the Hollywood handouts claim subsidies bring in new jobs. But that's not what studies show. Both the Texas Comptroller and the Wall Street Journal have found subsidies for film and television to be economically wasteful, at best producing temporary jobs. That's why many states have begun eliminating their Hollywood subsidies. But Texas has not. An independent and in-depth empirical study by the Massachusetts Department of Revenue in 2008 found that their state lost $88,000 in tax revenue for every job created by the Commonwealth's film tax credit. Meanwhile, the Florida Office of Economic Demographic Research also discovered that the state's incentives were temporary and included many out-of-state fly-ins. We still have our Hollywood subsidy going in Texas, despite conservatives trying to rid us of it. For several legislative sessions running, attempts have been made to shut down this wasteful form of corporate welfare. Rather than give the film industry special carve-outs, Texas lawmakers should instead consider policies that put everyone on equal footing. Cut taxes, cut regulations. After all, Texas didn't become a bastion of economic freedom and prosperity by repeating the mistakes of New York, California, and Louisiana. Texas lawmakers should rid the Lone Star State of corporate welfare, and ending the Hollywood film subsidy is a good place to start. In the Lone Star State, we don't need to subsidize starlets, we need to expand freedom. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all the time I have for this program. If you want more state and local news, including Destin's article about that effort to defund the Hollywood handouts, go over and check out our new texasscorecard.com. We got a new website up there, very flashy. And if you're enjoying the program, go and subscribe. We're now available on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. So check that out and subscribe. Make sure you never miss a program.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.